This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. This was right after the AFC title game, after the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills to earn their fifth trip to the Super Bowl in the last 7 years. In the 7 years that Patrick Mahomes been the starting quarterback, they've made the Super Bowl five times. They've won it three times. They are stuck at three after last night, after the Eagles defeated them 40-22. This was Nate Burleson on the set with the CBS studio crew telling you this is how you need to watch the Kansas City Chiefs moving forward.
To the fan bases out there, if you're not a Chiefs fan, that's okay. But resist the urge to fall for the narrative that we're tired of seeing them win, that we might be fatigued of watching KC go to the Super Bowl over and over again. You are witnessing greatness, and just be happy that you are alive to be there to see it.
Oh, just be happy.
Okay. You should be happy to be alive to be there to see it. You're going to tell me, a grown man, that I need to like my Brussels sprouts, okay? You just listen, mister. You need to appreciate that you get to be lucky enough to watch these Kansas City Chiefs, you idiots. That more than anything, that attitude, and we heard it from Trey Wingo, we heard it from various other people on Radio Row last week, all these sports media types that are so detached from the actual fans and don't understand, like, listen, the average fan doesn't have to get up and do a dissertation on the greatness of the Chiefs the next morning, all right? That it's okay. It's okay to want the winner to fail. It's like, that's fine, all right?
Yeah.
Don't anybody ever tell you how to fan.
I personally enjoy doing a dissertation on the Chiefs getting dismantled early in the show today.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that, Sean.
Well,
I think you're supposed to talk about the tragedy of the downfall of the Chiefs and how sad it was.
Come at me.
Oh, did you see Travis Kelce was upset about not getting any targets?
Yeah.
I feel so sad for him. He managed to hold off on like getting away with several tauntings. You know, like I actually did a. There was one time where I thought like, oh crap, he's gonna go headbutt some dude and the guy's gonna retaliate. But he actually held off on that.
I really respect what the Chiefs have done. I mean, making five Super Bowls in 7 years is incredible. It really is, and winning three of them. Last night's lopsided score notwithstanding, this is still a dynasty. This is by modern standards, we are still in the midst of a Chiefs dynasty. Obviously, it drove itself into a big pothole last night on its way to, you know, the comps to other dynasties and things like that. But I like millions of others, had Chiefs fatigue. I thought Patrick Mahomes strolling into the stadium in his Kelly Green suit that he was wearing. Did you see that? Did you see the color suit he was wearing?
Burn that thing,
Mahomes.
It's weird because the Chiefs have been in this position before, obviously, many times, and they've done very well. But I just had this weird feeling during the week that the Chiefs were doing a good job of saying all the right things in terms of focusing on this game and all that, and not worried about the three-peat and all that. But I did almost feel like they were, like they felt a sense of destiny about it in a way that it was approaching hubris. And boy, if it were a closer game, I would have thought, like, okay, that was just me reading into it too much. I don't know, man. They did not look physically ready to compete against that team at all.
No.
They got bludgeoned in every aspect of the game.
There was no counterpunch. You know, this is supposed to be a really well-coached team on the aggregate. Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo were largely viewed as maybe the two best at pushing the buttons on their side of the ball. Certainly Spags throughout this season, the last couple seasons. The Eagles were throttling Patrick Mahomes by rushing four guys the whole game.
Right. You know? Yeah, and that was one thing that Vic Fangio hasn't blitzed a lot this year. And there have been some games where he did blitz and it didn't work out for him. It worked out real well for him in the divisional round this year. They ended up blitzing a lot. But they just flat out beat the snot out of that offensive line. And look, other teams have had a chance to beat the snot out of that same offensive line. The Texans, I thought they were going to have a better pass rush than they did, versus, especially with Joe Tooney playing left tackle. But the Eagles just destroyed that offensive line. And then Pat Mahomes had no answers for it. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for Pat Mahomes, because you know who else who's had bad pass rushes? Or bad pass protection in games, many, many other quarterbacks in Super Bowls. And yet Pat Mahomes had the worst first half of just about any quarterback in Super Bowl history.
Oh, yeah.
It was awful.
It was bad.
He was atrocious. Tom Brady up in the booth, he played two games where they lost to the Giants when the Giants had a really good four-man pass rush. You know what Tom Brady did? He made a game of it.
Yeah.
He showed up.
Yeah.
It was disrespectful to the game of football and every quarterback who's come before him last night. Pat Mahomes. Disgusting.
The question I had asked was, who are we most happy for? A lot of people very happy for Jalen Hurts. Look, I'm not a huge Eagles guy. I was not wild about either of these teams. But in terms of rooting interest, aside from a prop bet here and there, in terms of rooting for who to win the game, I was rooting for the Eagles. I did not want the three-peat, as I pointed out. I've not been wild with the way that the Chiefs, the Kansas City fans, the Kansas City media have handled this success that they've had here. So it was kind of fun to see the bully get punched in the face a little bit last night. This was one of those games that the more lopsided it got, the more I was enjoying it. We don't see the Chiefs get handled this the way that they do. So I was happy for Jalen Hurts. Certainly the Houston angle with Jalen Hurts. He's a very likable superstar. Like he's got a very easy to like personality. I'm curious for you, Seth. You have ties, pretty close ties, to two of the prominent members of that Eagles inner circle. Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, was your DC here for your first four seasons as a Texan. And then Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach, was on the staff when you were in college at Cornell.
Yeah.
How happy are you for those two guys right
now? Oh, okay, good. I thought you were going to have me power rank it.
No, in terms of happiness or whatever.
I think, honestly, I mean, Fangio's been at it for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, remember we were looking, when we were at Mother's there in New Orleans, there was a picture of the 92 Saints up there, and Vic Fangio's the linebackers coach. So, and that was, they did some really good stuff with those Saints defenses when Fangio and Capers were there. And for him to be able to do it in New Orleans was probably really cool too. But he's just been around forever, and when he was in Houston here, by the time he was done, he was pretty beleaguered. Like, people were blaming Fangio as one of the problems with the team, where he just got hit with a boatload of injuries that really he couldn't do what he wanted to do. But then with Jeff Stoutland, I mean, Stoutland has been there through three different head coaches, the offensive line coach, and he's widely regarded as one of the best offensive line coaches this century.
Maybe ever.
But he's already got a Super Bowl. So I guess if I'm going to power rank them the way I know you wanted to ask me to do, I would say Vic Fangio, I'm happier than Stoutland, just because Stoutland's already won a Super Bowl.
Had you not power ranked them there, I was going to point out that Vic Fangio's never won a Super Bowl before. So
yeah,
that's,
and he's been at it longer, too. He's been in the NFL a lot longer and never gotten a Super Bowl.
And he's a native Pennsylvanian. He's from that part of the country. So he's winning a Super Bowl with presumably the team that he may have grown up rooting for, you know?
You know what I couldn't help thinking about was – just all those Miami defensive players that acted like Vic Fangio was the worst defensive coordinator in the world.
Yeah.
One of them, Xavier Howard was one of them, wasn't
he? Yeah.
That, like, all right, guys, like, maybe point the finger at yourself there, fella.
That was,
There seems like Fangio's defense is doing all right with good talent up there in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Jalen Hurts. Hey, did you see Connor Barwin down there on the sidelines at all during the game?
He's is he the director of football science or director of football research or something? Some kind of funky title that you would expect Connor Barwin to have, because he looks at things a little bit differently than your average football guy. So yeah, I was really happy for Connor.
He does. But I think it was strange. I was not expecting to see him on the sidelines with a headset on, because he's got a title that feels a little more front office-y, you know?
Yeah, I think he's probably one of those guys that they like because he can work on the analytics side of things, but also very much understands the player side of things.
Yep.
So I wonder if with him, maybe he also dabbles in the, he's probably got like the way that Caserio kind of looked at his role with the Patriots, where maybe he's a jack of all trades and they just use him wherever he feels he can help out.
Yeah. Where does Bradley Cooper fall for you on the list of celebrities that you would either feel happy for or would bask in their failure if their team were to have lost? Do you like Bradley Cooper?
I like Bradley Cooper.
I do too.
I feel like he's got an everyman appeal to him. For a guy that's a really good-looking Hollywood actor, I feel like he still just genuinely has a little bit of his Philly blue-collar roots.
Yeah.
And because I saw Silver Linings Playbook for the first time recently, it makes me feel like, I don't know, that somehow that because he actually did a movie about being a Philadelphia Eagles fan, it lends more authenticity to it.
He did better introducing his team before the game than John Hamm did at introducing the Chiefs before the game, I thought.
John Hamm kind of choked.
A little bit.
His voice didn't hold up.
Nope.
Now, with John Hamm may have partaken of the festivities a little bit more this weekend, a little bit more hardcore than Bradley Cooper, who was there with his family.
That could be.
Hamm's got a history of enjoying life.
He does.
So I don't know how much he was enjoying it last leading up to that game or not.
Boy, our former colleague Nick Wright is just taking some on the text page. They are texting this show like Nick Wright still hosts this show on the text page this morning. And I think that's probably a good harbinger for what Ron has waiting for him when he gets in at 2 o'clock today, I would imagine.
Real quick, yeah. Connor Barwin right now is the head of football development and strategy for the Eagles.
Okay.
So I wonder if he's in on when they use the analytics for making in-game decisions, I wonder if he's involved
in
that.
Dude, knowing Sirianni and the way he operates, he's probably outsourced that whole thing to Barwin. I just think Sirianni might just walk around just cheering guys on and slapping their shoulder pads.
That's one of the things, going back to Doug Peterson, that the Eagles were pretty ahead of the curve on, is just using the analytics and the going forward on fourth and short and all that. Like they've been getting guidance from the booth on that for a long time.
Hey, speaking of Nick Wright, Joey Molinaro, who is a comedian who is excellent at doing impersonations, and he's very specific that he's kind of found this niche where he does really good impersonations of people that are tied to football in some way, either announcers or hosts or players or coaches, that kind of thing. Does some excellent impersonations. I didn't know Nick Wright was somebody that was impersonatable.
Nick's huge because of social media.
Yeah.
Because he's so good at agitating people too, that like he's a lot of people that don't watch like the talk shows on television know Nick Wright because he has agitated them at some point.
Yeah.
Especially because he's played the game really good of acting like somehow being a fan of LeBron James makes him a like,
and the Chiefs,
saying that LeBron James is good he does it really well. He figures out a way to make that a polarizing take.
Yeah.
But then he is a genuine Chiefs fan and grew up in Kansas City. So yeah, he's been hardcore into trumpeting Pat Mahomes these years.
So I saw this tweet yesterday. Joey Molinaro, the comedian, says he did this about 45 seconds worth of audio of what it would be like to sit next to Nick Wright at a Super Bowl party.
Not only is Patrick Mahomes the greatest player ever to live, that's a foregone conclusion at this point, but I think it's fair to start having the conversation about whether or not he's not the greatest player ever to live, but is he the greatest human being ever to step foot on planet Earth Yes. Oh, by the way, closing in on Jesus Christ himself. Look, and I know what you're going to say. Jesus walked on water. He changed the water to wine. He fed the fishes and the loaves story. I get all that. But I think it's a fair conversation to have about what would Jesus Christ go 7-for-7 in AFC Championship games, essentially from his rookie year from the jump. AFC Championship every year. Three MVPs. A three-peat in today's NFL? With the way that it's designed for parity, I don't think so. I think it's a fair question to say, and I think we're going to be having that discussion in, oh, I don't know, about 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Okay. I was, you know what? I, listening to it, it was way better than I gave it credit for the first time, because he doesn't do as good a job at like looking like the people that he's impersonating, but he nailed the
cadence,
the phrasing, the cadence, the intonation and everything. I feel like Nick speaks a little bit faster, but that was really good.
Yeah.
So those are some of my favorite. There's a guy that does the Bill Simmons show, the Bill Simmons podcast, and he'll do Bill Simmons reacting to world history with, like, you know, Bill Simmons just always has to, like, there's like a Jack Easterby element to Bill Simmons where he thinks, like, as long as it's outside the box, then it's brilliant. And these guys are awesome. I don't know if it's one guy that does, like, all the different ones, but yeah, they're, I like those guys. I like the guys that do a little bit more of the niche impersonations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. That was. I'm listening to this. I'm going, I would have never thought to impersonate Nick. And Joey had it, like, just the cadence, but the spirit of the whole thing, too. Like, the very end where he snarkily says, like, and we'll find out in about 2.5 hours. Like, that's totally something
Nick would
say.
I would imagine they'll play that on his Fox show at some point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and make no mistake. Nick is probably wearing that as a badge of honor.
No, Nick will appreciate that.
100%, 100%.
I feel like, and Nick's pretty safe at Fox Sports. I would. Nick's not into the shenanigans of a lot of those other guys that have been.
No, he didn't wind up in any.
Having
lawsuits.
Worked and known Nick for a long time, we never have to worry about
Nick
that.
Nick is very loyal to his wife. Yes, Danielle's the best.
Well, and even if he wasn't married, he's just He is very respectful to people in general.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right. Tom Brady said something interesting on the Colin Cowherd show at the Super Bowl this week. Could Brady be describing in this cut we're about to hear the type of quarterback C.J. Stroud can become with new leadership? We will hear from Brady and Nico Collins, actually, coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. The Eagles destroy the Chiefs in the Super Bowl yesterday. We'll be talking about that plenty between now and the end of the show. We'll be on it all day long here on Sports Radio 610. Tom Brady was pretty prominently featured throughout the week. Of course, he was on the call last night. I am anxious to see, before we get to this comment from Brady on the Colin Cowherd show, which I thought was excellent insight we're about to hear, I'm anxious to hear what the reviews are for Brady, Seth, from the people who make a living, the Richard Deitches of the world that make a living commenting about the commentary last night.
I don't think Brady sucks at all. I just also don't think that he's all that interesting. He's boring, I think. And I felt like, too, I think maybe at this point he's trying too hard almost, but also he didn't offer that much extra insight into what it's like being in the Super Bowl. There were times last night where I thought he did a good job with the game management stuff. But I've never felt like he's really bringing something to the table that a lot of other commentators can. You're listening to one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare that he's saying anything where you feel like, oh, yeah, boy, yeah, he would get that or he would understand that. But you know that's in him, you know? Like, it's just that I just feel like there's way more that he's just not even scratching the surface when it comes to him being able to give his insight into all of the details. And it doesn't even have to be schematic. It could be about the psychology of it. And even when he was talking about how when the Chiefs in the third quarter, like, they just got to go out there and execute. Like, I'm not going to judge him for talking about himself if he brings up the Atlanta Super Bowl.
No.
Because that's exactly what I was thinking.
That's
what I think a lot of people at home are thinking. But I think he's trying so hard to be good on his own merits that he probably feels like leaning into his personal experience is almost like cheating. But he's like the model that wants to be known for her intellect.
Yeah,
all right, like, yeah, great, we get it. You're smart, but like you're making the money because you're pretty. Okay?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's a perfect analogy. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a game where the current GOAT, Patrick Mahomes, is down by, 24 points. Brady was down 28-3 against Atlanta. Boy, we're going to get a lot of insight as to what maybe Mahomes is going through here. What's how do you attack this? What's the mentality? Don't get out over your skis, whatever it may be. And he's got 10 Super Bowls to draw anecdotes from. And you can't sit here and tell me that it's hard to recall from that. This dude has recall for days about certain situations in regular season games.
Yeah, and that's the easy part of the job.
Yeah,
is just drawing on your personal experience. And I don't think Brady's not going to be one of those guys where you feel like, oh, this guy's always talking about himself and his history.
No.
Because that can be tiresome and annoying. I try not to do that too much because it just starts to sound like, okay, you're just talking about yourself. But like Brady has so much relevant experience with stuff like this that I don't think anybody's going to accuse him of that, of being lazy or just making it about himself if he brings that stuff up.
Totally. Well, so here's Brady. This is on the Colin Cowherd Show. Take a listen to this. This is Brady comparing himself to other quarterbacks that have these superhero physical tool power. The Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons of the world, whoever it may have been, maybe Aaron Rodgers during Brady's playing days. Brady did it with his brain, he said. This was him describing his superhero power.
The one benefit you have as a quarterback, before you snap the ball, you know where everybody on your team is running. If you have five eligibles out in the route, I know where all five are going. If I look at the defense and I say, none of my guys are going to be open based on this coverage, we didn't design the play for this coverage, I don't need to snap the ball. I can run something different. I can check to a run. I can check to a screen. I can signal a receiver and change a route. And then I would just change the route to a route that I thought would be open. I'd catch the ball, I'd throw it, and it'd be a 15-yard gain. Everyone would be like, it looks so easy. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's easy because you're not paying attention to the right thing.
Right.
What's going on in here is what my superpower was. That was Peyton Manning's superpower. That was Drew Brees' superpower. Those were the guys that I tried to be like. That's what we did a great job of. So that part of the game is what I am really fascinated by. And when I see players play like that, those are the guys that I think have the most upside.
Right. And so last night, what I really wanted out of Brady especially was give me some explanation of what Mahomes is seeing downfield when he's under pressure. And that part of it, because I know, for one, because on TV you can't see what the coverage is doing. And Brady can. And you know that Brady is seeing all of that. And I never felt like, or at least I didn't notice, he was really painting a picture of exactly what Mahomes was seeing. And I don't know why. Like, I don't know why he wouldn't be doing that. Because that's, and you don't have to be overly technical about it.
No.
It's just, it's strange. It's really strange that he's not bringing that element to the game. So I don't think he was bad, but I don't think he was doing anything that multiple other color commentators couldn't do, including some of the guys who weren't quarterbacks, or lots of the guys who weren't quarterbacks.
Yeah, just it felt like, for me, like he just wasn't touching on nearly the experience that he had. Like that's his superhero power, is he's the greatest to ever do it, and he's played in 10 of these things. As far as the element of quarterbacking that he described there and compares himself to Manning and Brees, we're talking about three guys, Brady, Manning, and Brees, that their superhero power was their football intellect, their ability to be two steps ahead of everybody. Do you think, I don't think, ever going to have a superhero power that compares to, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Maybe Mahomes with all the slippery ways that he can get rid of the ball with the different release points and things like that. It feels to me like if CJ is going to get to this level where these guys are playing in Super Bowls, it's going to be a similar thing to what Brady is describing.
I think even this year, when CJ was struggling in some of the toughest games, that he still makes. I think he does make a lot of those throws that aren't they don't look as remarkable as you realize they are when you go back and watch the end zone copy. So that part of it, when it comes to the physical skill set, I think he very much has that ability to make the crazy off-platform, weird body angle throws and everything. But yes, and some of that's going to be from his ability to do all those things at the line of scrimmage, though. Like, can he be like those guys? Yes, I think so. The one drawback of Slowik in his offense, I think, and it's, I don't want to put it all on Slowik because he's also working with a young quarterback, but I think philosophically, Slowik doesn't expect or necessarily want to have that quarterback who has the full command of the playbook at the line of scrimmage. They could check into run, they could check into pass, but it's all kind of predetermined what you're going to check into. And, I mean, Slowik himself said it in one of the press conferences this year, is that they don't do a lot of diagnosing before the snap, because the old theory in that play, in a Kubiak-Shanahan scheme, is that whatever play you call, there's an answer for the coverage in that play. And for lack of a better word, I feel like that's kind of primitive in terms of getting the absolute most out of a quarterback. And when you look at Peyton Manning, who ironically enough, it was him combining with Gary Kubiak in Denver, where like Peyton brought a lot more to the table in terms of what he could do pre-snap than Kubiak usually expected out of his quarterbacks, people would point to that Broncos Super Bowl victory and say, well, I mean, how much did Manning really do? Anybody could make those throws. Like, no, it's what Brady was just talking about. It's getting into those easy throws where Manning was still really good at that.
Yep.
So yes, physically lots of other guys could have made those throws, but those throws wouldn't have been available to them because they wouldn't have made the checks before the snap.
Yeah.
So that's my long way of saying yes, 100%. I think CJ's very, very intellectually suited to be able to be that type of quarterback. He's just got to have an offensive coordinator that expects it of him.
What do you think of Cayley? I mean, we don't know anything about how Nick Cayley's going to run things yet. We've got no history with him as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I would 100% expect that's what he thinks and wants. Yeah. I mean, he was in New England. He was there with Tom Brady.
Yep.
He saw the way Matt Stafford operates, and they changed that scheme a lot over the course of the last few years, and Nick Cayley was involved in all of that. So I would expect him to be a little bit more of a chess match type of quarterback. But now here's the danger, and because we saw this with Bill O'Brien and so many other coaches who left New England. What they sometimes fail to really understand and recognize is that Brady's IQ is the equivalent of a 3.940.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like saying, like, hey, go out there and run as fast as Deion Sanders, okay? That's all I want you to do. So they would think, oh, yeah, Brian Hoyer or Ryan Mallett, because they know the system. Yeah, certainly they're better than this bum Ryan Fitzpatrick. But that's the danger, is in like not really appreciating or understanding how hard it is to operate like Tom Brady. So that's, you know, I don't know if Nick Cayley appreciates it or understands it, but there's only so much you can do in one offseason to get a guy to play mentally like Tom Brady. That's something that comes with years and years and years of seeing it over and over again.
Yep. Hey, if you're looking to get to Vegas in March for the college football, or college basketball, I should say, championship tournament, that experience, be listening at least an hour each day to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app, and that'll enter you in our Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. Still got a couple more weeks to get this done. If you win, you and three friends are going to be headed to Vegas to stay at the Circa Resort and Casino. Amazing sports book there, the stadium swim experience where you can watch all the games outside in the pool on gigantic movie screens. That'll be part of the whole thing as well. You just got to listen an hour each day. Download the Odyssey app. Oh, by the way, did I mention you're going to get an extra $20,000 in your pocket to spend while you're in Vegas? How about that? Listen for an hour each day. You'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Up next, the perfect offseason was on display, full display, last night in the Super Bowl. We'll explain coming up next.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It's a 13-16 for the Chiefs and a shotgun snap from their own 24. Rolling out of the pocket, Mahomes. Line drive. It's intercepted at the 40. It picked off by DeGene, who comes to the near side of the 30. Got it back at the 20. Breaks the tackle. The 10. The 5. To the pylon. Touchdown! Eagles have got a pick 6. Mahomes in the gun, gets the snap, drips him back in the end zone, pressured on a five-man rush, throws a quick pass, diving interception, it's made by Bond on the hash mark at the 14, Patrick Mahomes has just thrown his second interception today.
All right, that was the sequence there. The pick six kind of pushed the Chiefs to the edge. The interception on the very first play, under the two-minute warning there that Mahomes threw, is getting heat from his left from Josh Sweat, was pushing Joe Tooney, the left tackle, right into Mahomes' left side. And I thought that affected the throw for sure. Zach Bond made an incredible play on it. Those two picks, yeah. Seth, those two picks I thought highlighted something we had talked about the week going in, which is, man, this was an Eagles team that looked a whole lot more like a team whose window was either closing or damaged at the end of last year. Like, you know, they fired both of their coordinators. Jalen Hurts looked like he wanted to be doing anything but playing football at the end of last season. You know, does Nick Sirianni, did he just stumble his way into a Super Bowl the year before? Is he, you know, Forrest Gump, or is he an actual good coach? And Howie Roseman was able to, with I'm sure participation by Nick Sirianni in some of these decisions, was able to not only right the ship, but turn them into a team that was up by 34 points in the fourth quarter on the most dominant force over the last 7 years, the Kansas City Chiefs. The two guys we just heard there, DeGene, a second-round pick, Bond, of a cheap free agent, both making plays there that I thought were indicative of how they played in the regular season. Throw Quinyon Mitchell in there, who was their first-round pick. You got two really good corners to put alongside Darius Slay. You almost forget Darius Slay's on this football team. You didn't hear his name at all last night either. And then obviously the signing of Saquon Barkley, which was not as impactful in the box score last night, but just Saquon Barkley being out there probably opened a whole lot of things up for Jalen Hurts. And then the two coordinators. Kellen Moore is one and done. He's going to go get a head coaching job after 1 year on the offense. And Vic Fangio on the defense was putting on a master class last night.
Fangio would be the first one to tell you that it's a lot easier being a defensive coordinator when you've got a really, really good four-man pass rush, which they did. But going back to Howie Roseman, they drafted Jalen Carter in the first round last year. And it was, well, I guess 2 drafts ago.
Yeah.
But that was a bit of a risky move in terms of the controversy surrounding Jalen Carter at that point. And he ended up being a huge force behind being able to have a four-man pass rush. Howie Roseman is a guy that, remember, was demoted by Chip Kelly, basically.
Yes. Yes.
That was when Chip Kelly pulled a Bill O'Brien and had a really good showing offensively and decided he needed control over personnel. And that's when everything really started to fall apart for Chip Kelly with the Eagles. And then Howie Roseman gets himself back into the driver's seat and has done some very good things since then and going to several Super Bowls. It's that's just a well-constructed football team.
It is,
and
man.
They've got first-rounders who are performing very well, but they also have guys who are journeyman free agents or fourth-round picks, or like Mekhi Becton's a first-round pick, but was like kind of picked up off the scrap heap and now playing a different position than he was drafted to play. He's just put together a hell of a football team.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, like, if you're looking MVPs, you know, like, you could argue, like, I know you got to vote for players, but Howie Roseman and Vic Fangio, man. Like, if you could vote for guys that weren't players last night, you know?
Especially with Vic, Vic, the reason some players don't like Vic Fangio's defense is that he asks them to do a lot mentally. And that's where having two rookie cornerbacks and playing some of the coverages and doing some of the things, the pattern matching and other things that Vic likes to do, it's not easy. So to coach up Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean as rookies to go out there and be cornerbacks going up against Pat Mahomes and guys like that, that's the part that's really impressive, because if there's a weakness in coverage, Mahomes is going to find it. And everything was just taken care of and disciplined in the defensive backfield. It was overall, and I mean, you look and that's what the Eagles have been since they got off to a bit of a rocky start early in the season.
Yep.
They've been pretty damn dominant. It's just that people were so enraptured by the prospect of a three-peat that they didn't seem to notice that the Eagles have been playing really, really good football.
Yeah, no doubt. If there were a play in last night's game that if I were a Chiefs fan would have made me the most nervous physically about Mahomes, ironically, it was towards the end of the game where the game was out of reach. The last turnover that the Eagles forced where Mahomes is dropping back to throw, I forget which player. They just showed it again on the TV in here. But there's a player on the Eagles that catches his arm while it's back, you know, like in the back part of his throwing motion. And I'm like, damn, that's the same type of hit on an arm that tore Brock Purdy's UCL back in the playoffs a couple of years ago that the Eagles put on him. Like, it was one of those things, like, Mahomes couldn't even, like, follow through at all. They hit his arm, and then somebody came in and hit him in the face, too, with a hand. That I feel like if that weren't a 30-point game at the time, if that were, like, a 3-point game, I feel like that might have gotten called.
That was my thought at the moment, too. We do see that a lot, that it just gets missed a lot. The hand to the quarterback's face, sometimes the officials there, with both officials standing behind Mahomes, too, there's a really good chance, you know, that they didn't see it at all. The umpire stands behind the quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
But it would have been a source of controversy, perhaps, at least on the Chiefs' side of things. I feel like that was a little bit of a cherry on top to where, like, all right, if the officials are going to botch a play or a call or a non-call, it's nice that it was a call that would have gone in favor of the Chiefs. And at that point, it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
No.
The Chiefs were dead men walking.
Charles Omenihu did not have a great day. He lined up offsides on a third down that allowed a drive to stay alive. I don't think the Eagles ultimately scored on that drive. But then there was a shot of him on the sidelines. Just very emotional, Charles.
Was he crying?
He was definitely crying.
Was he crying?
Yes, he was absolutely crying in my eyes. He was a former Texan, obviously, who's had a lot of things to say about the Texans since leaving. I did the old search on the X last night of Omenihu crying.
Yeah.
Just to see what people were saying, and there were a lot of Texan fans. This will probably show up in the Pettycast tomorrow, I would imagine, but a lot of Texan fans very happy to see Omenihu bawling his eyes out on the sideline.
Yeah.
They did the thing, Seth, that you do where you've got the video that's split into two kind of horizontal videos, and the one on the upper part was Omenihu crying. The one on the lower part was saying that he doesn't F with the Texans anymore in that podcast that he did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of Texan fans.
I was happy. You know what? Thank God. So, Chris Jones puts eye drops in. The defensive tackle for the Chiefs. And a lot of you at home may have noticed, like, especially in these big games through the years, they love to zoom in on Chris Jones' face on the sideline during the national anthem because it looks like he's crying. Like, it's a poignant moment when, in fact, it's just eye drops. I bet Chris Jones has gotten sick of it just because it's misrepresenting the moment. Not that he wouldn't. I'm not saying he's not patriotic or anything, but he's probably got tired of, like, being the face of, like, wow, look at this guy.
I don't know.
He's so overcome with the moment that he's crying.
So,
that he had a tissue in his hand, I think, to wipe away the tears.
He did so yesterday. Yeah,
they tried. They zoomed in on him like seven times.
Him and Sirianni,
anthem.
They both zoomed in because Sirianni
was genuinely crying in the first Super Bowl.
So you're saying that Chris Jones has these eye drops and he puts them in for medical purposes, not to look like a sensitive male on TV.
I don't think he's trying to cry during the national anthem.
No.
I think he's putting those eye drops in before the game, and they tend to drip down. Maybe he leaned into it for a little while, but he probably got sick of it.
It might not be a bad way to pick up chicks, you know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're the guy that was crying during, oh, you know, oh, oh, you were crying.
Make up some story about your
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, like a relative who was like killed in Vietnam or something. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Chris Jones might be a delicate genius.
The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then you'd see it over and over again.
That's funny. That
I had to dig into it. And it's just, he's got eye drops.
That's funny. All right. I've got my notes in front of me here from the Super Bowl. I got some random musings from the Super Bowl I want to bounce off of Seth, including one. Boy, you say what you will about Tom Brady and this and his commentary in the game. There is one part of Brady's commentary that I am very curious gets addressed somehow by Fox or the league this offseason. We will tell you what that is coming up next.